today I have Paul Gardner. He's a South African conservationist and entrepreneur, best known for his work in ecotourism and hospitality. He is a director of Mantis Group, which is a global hospitality brand. And the reason why I am speaking to him today is he created and hosts the YouTube series Natural Born Runners as a program aimed at highlighting ecotourism. Well, the last time I caught up with you, Paul, you were in icy Antarctica and you were running there. Well, today I'm joining you here in the south of England, where he's based, and we're doing a BOMA and we're doing things the South African way. And he's going to talk about a bold vision to create the next Kruger Park in the Eastern Cape. Welcome,
thank
Paul.
You. It's so nice to see you in person this time, and I'm very grateful to you and your listeners for tuning in to hear this next story, which is a fascinating one.
So this vision of a Kruger Park, or almost a Kruger Park in the Eastern Cape, where does this come from?
I grew up in the Eastern Cape with my brother and my sister. My folks lived in Port Elizabeth. You know, Dad's legacy then was to create the first ever real private game reserve down in the Eastern Cape. And so we grew up with that whole rewilding project because there was nothing there when he started. And he was looking all over the Southern Africa for a good location for a game reserve, because he used to go up to Mala Mala and Sabi Sands as a guest. And he was so inspired by that model. And he just wanted to have his little patch. And he looked at Zimbabwe, where he was originally from, and other parts of Africa. And he then thought, okay, well, the boys are at St. Andrews in Grahamstown, and I'm in PE with his wife. And it makes sense to do something close to home because you can really make it work. And then he started to research the Eastern Cape, the old records of the 1820 British settlers. And he was gobsmacked by their documentation of the wildlife encounters that they had in those early days of their arrival from Britain. I mean, there were lions and black rhinos and elephants. Everything existed there. And Dad would often say, after his realization and that the Eastern Cape used to be so biodiverse, was that it was probably the right place to build and establish Kruger National Park first anyway, because of this huge carrying capacity. You know, there are 9 biomes in the world. 7 are in the Eastern Cape, in that little corner of Africa, which is quite remarkable, which means you can carry so much more diversity in wildlife.
Well, walk us through your plan. How do you want to bring about this Kruger in the Eastern Cape?
So, I mean, I wouldn't say it's my plan. There's a lot of players behind it, because when Dad started his patch of land 30 years ago, it became known as Shamwari Game Reserve, very well established today. We no longer own it. We own a little piece adjacent to it called Founders Lodge, and it's a commercial lodge, and we do all our game drives and traversing into Shamwari. But when he started Shamwari all those years ago, all the local farmers and communities laughed at him. They said, there's no ways this guy's going to bring back elephants and create a business out of it. What the heck is he doing? And, you know, and then 1995 Rugby World Cup happened. You know, we'd just come out of apartheid. Nelson Mandela donned the green and gold, and we won the tournament. And of course, the floodgates to tourism opened. And this little game reserve that Dad had established then was in the right place at the right time. You know, it was at the end of the garden route, closest to Cape Town. He coined the phrase, the malaria-free safari. And suddenly, tourism arrived in our country in a big way. And Shamwari was just so well primed for it. And so all those farmers that once laughed at Dad said, hang on, we're missing a trick here. We must do the same thing. Let's check out the sheep and the goats and the cattle and establish wildlands. And so fast forward to 2024, almost 2025 now, there must be close to 20 private game reserves around Shamwari. So lots of competition. Addo Elephant Park was only 11,000 hectares. You know, Addo Elephant Park is a national park. In the late 90s or the early 90s, it was about 10,000-11,000 hectares. They're now almost the second largest national park in the country. They're 250,000 hectares in size. They've returned the big five. They all looked at Dad's vision for Shamwari, and they said, we're all missing a trick here. So it wasn't just private sector, it was government as well. And so what's now happened is you've got all these little pockets. You've got Shamwari, and you've got Lalibela, Amakala across the road, Kirika is another one, Kwandwe, and Pumba. So there's a whole section of private pockets. They're all fenced off, and there are still regular farming activities that happen in between those pockets. And we're all starting to have discussions about opening up and tearing down fences and establishing corridors between these reserves, which really gets interesting. Well, obviously, it comes with a lot of challenges, but we're not reinventing the wheel either, because if you go up to the Kruger National Park, there's a lot of that has already happened, albeit they were very lucky because they could all feed off Kruger Park's wildlife. And if you tear down a fence, the animals move through and you can tear down more and more and more. So it's been a lot easier journey for them, you know, whereas us in the Eastern Cape had to bring everything back. So, you know, if it was Amakala across the road from Shamwari, they had to bring everything back. There was no interconnectivity. Addo is probably about 50 or 60 kilometers away from all these private reserves and all these pockets. So we couldn't feed off Addo, and Addo's expanded. So they didn't want to give all their animals away either. So you can see it's been far more of a challenge because we've had to bring stuff back. Kruger was the bank that fed everything. So that's one of the big challenges we face. But the game that has been reintroduced has just boomed. And so it's now time. There's pressure on these animals. You know, you have too much. The lions can only eat so much, but you've got to probably sell. You've got to manage your lion population. So by opening it all up, it gets quite exciting.
So I've got this vision. You know, if you talk about corridors, they are highways. So, you know, how does an elephant cross a highway?
It's been done in other parts of the world, you know, whether it be bears and wolves and everything else. There are lots of very interesting initiatives. But the Eastern Cape, being as vast as it is, we're quite fortunate because there's very few communities or towns that block the corridors. You know, it's very rural out there. But the main barriers are roads, railway lines, and maybe a few communities. Amakala Game Reserve, next to Shamwari again, is the first. So they were actually split. They have the N2, the road from PE to Durban, or Kabega to Durban, and it splits their reserve. But underneath the N2 is this big bridge which goes over the Bushman's River. And they have just got the permissions to let the animals flow through that. And I thought, I can't see an elephant walking under a highway. You know, it's just not going to happen. You'd have to almost bait it with oranges or something. And I phoned a chap called Matt Hart yesterday. He's the owner of one of the reserves, or one of the lodges and pieces of land within Amakala. And he said, you won't believe it, Paul. The big elephant bulls are moving under the bridge. The lions have moved through. Cheetah have moved through. And so it's probably 100 meters. I'm not too sure, but it's amazing when you start doing that. The simplest thing, and that the corridor is actually working, which is so amazing. So on our side of the road, we've probably got to look at partnering with some of those farmers that may want to continue farming, and maybe they can establish corridors through some of the deeper valley where the sheep won't be. That's how we've got to do it. We've got to create those natural corridors or buy out that land potentially. So there's lots of things that need to happen, but it's coming. It's definitely going to happen. I'm sure it's going to happen. And we're so excited about it, because the one thing that happened when I was a youngster was, besides my father, there were the Rushmeres, the Folds family, lots of settler families there. They started rewilding. But that was our parents' generation. They were the rewilders. And I keep saying to myself, we've got to be the corridor creators. That's the next journey for all of us, and that's got to be our legacy.
You talked a little bit about the logistical challenges. Would there be political challenges? What about communities that you might have to move, or how could communities benefit?
Mm. So there will certainly be, and I think we've got to take a feather out of the cap of the, you know, those larger reserves adjacent to Kruger that tore down their fences. You know, you've got to figure out a constitution, you know, how many vehicles you can carry. And if animals cross into your private farm, can our vehicles go there and see them? All of that. So we're not going to reinvent any wheels. We've been offered to look at those constitutions and understand them. Politically, we've engaged with East Cape Parks, because they're also on a similar mission. They're trying to link the big Addo Elephant Park up with the Great Fish River Reserve, which is another park of theirs, full of wildlife. And there's a lot of land in between that would need to be acquired, or partnerships established with, you know, hunting outfitters, maybe some private game reserves, maybe some farmers, maybe some communities. So they've got to figure that journey out for themselves. And that's going to come with challenges. But again, you know, it's just sitting around the table figuring it out. In terms of communities, the communities sit on quite a lot of land in the Eastern Cape, but it's just sitting there almost obsolete. Nothing's been done with it. And so is there an opportunity to incorporate them? And then, you know, there must be much more financial opportunity for them rather than maybe running a few cattle and subsistence farming. If suddenly they had 50 black rhino that are home to that area, well, that gets quite interesting for them because, you know, there's got to be a value in that, a bigger value in that. And then maybe they sell a concession to a private lodge developer who establishes a lodge there, and they, you know, then they benefit from the lease that is paid by the lodge owner to the community. So I think all those models, again, we're not reinventing the wheel. A lot of it's happened up north, but I think we can learn a lot from up north and bring those models down to the Eastern Cape. So.
So how big eventually, we're talking about, you know, Kruger, but how big eventually would it be?
Because there's a couple of organizations that are really spearheading this. One is the Wilderness Foundation Africa. You know, that was the late Dr. Ian Player's foundation. Mm-hmm. We all know Gary Player. Well, Ian Player was his brother. And what Gary was to golf, Ian was to conservation. And he effectively saved the white rhino in the 50s and the 60s. There were only a few hundred left, and today there are 20,000 left. So he's got great legacy. But his foundation is run by a gentleman called Dr. Andrew Muir. He's a great friend to us and everybody in the Eastern Cape. And so he's key to this. And he works very closely with government, with East Cape Parks. And then the second piece to the puzzle is an organization called the Conservation Landscape Institute. And there's a gentleman there called Peter Chadwick, and he works very closely with all those private landowners, with Andrew Muir, to try and put all the pieces to the puzzle together. And it's quite nice having somebody that's independent. He's not a landowner. He just wants to see this work. But I think after chatting to Andrew, just to come back to your question, that this could get to 5 or 6 million hectares. And now I'm thinking, you know, it's Addo, it's Fish River, it's all the private parties, it's getting some of those agricultural farmers into the mix too, and communities. So it's a long play. It's not going to happen overnight. It could take between 15, 25 years, maybe longer. There's so much politics that will come out of this, but I think everybody is super keen to see this happen.
So on a larger scale, what would this project mean for wildlife in South Africa and Southern Africa?
You know, there's so many advantages to humans too, because you've got the socioeconomic drive, you know, job creation, life skills, you know, game ranger. We could set up all of those things, schools and clinics. So there's a big play for that. If there's money that's been made out of conservation, fantastic. All of that will sprout. For wildlife, it's big, because I think in the world that we live in today, in terms of the climate crisis and everything else, everybody's talking about bringing back biodiversity. So if we've farmed the hell out of a piece of land, you've got to start figuring out how you're going to rewild a portion of it, and, you know, farm the right way and whatever else. So I think the Eastern Cape does this. It's good for many reasons, because it's going to attract, you know, if you look at some of the big multinationals around the world, they're looking for opportunities around the world to offset their carbon emissions and that, carbon credits, and, you know, delve into all of that. What a province to assist if we've got this incredible roadmap. And that's what makes it quite interesting for wildlife, because, you know, you can imagine now we don't have, I'll give you a really classic and simple example. Mm-hmm. Wild dogs used to exist in the Eastern Cape. Because a reserve like Shamwari and Kwandwe are sort of around 25, 30,000 hectares, again, fenced off, it can't sustain a pack of wild dogs. So we attempted it at Shamwari in the early days, and they ate us out of house and home. I mean, we had packs of dogs running through the lodge with guests in it. It was amazing to have them there, but it lasted a year. We actually had to sell them on. So the Eastern Cape's not quite ready for that. But when you start taking the fence down, creating corridors, then the wild dogs will thrive. And that just, you know, the spirit of the land really starts to flourish. Another is we've got a lot of more brown hyena. Addo's got spotted, but spotted, we'd need more space too. So, you know, then you hear the spotted hyena crying in the evening. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful noise. So Yeah, I think it's going to open up the opportunity to bring more of the species that were once there that are no longer.
You mentioned that you might have these carbon credits, rhino credits. Is there a name for it?
Well, there is.
What is it called?
Well, there's a thing called the rhino bond.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
A rhino bond or
But
whatever it's
basically,
called. You can create something really unique, probably.
yeah, it's been trialed by the World Bank. And they trialed it with Addo and Great Fish, again, the two government reserves in the province. And yeah, you as an investor can invest in these rhino bonds. And rather than just in a normal thing, you know, it could be seen as a bit of a corporate social investment or an impact investment, probably a better word. And so those are the types of initiatives that also could sprout up in the Eastern Cape. It's quite a complicated thing. They just need to make it a bit more simpler, because that's what will probably speed up the process. Because, you know, one of the biggest barriers with any of these things is finance. How do you raise the funds for this? And, you know, when we're more established, we're going to have to go out there and get grants. And that's where the Conservation Institute, the Landscape Institute and the Wilderness Foundation will really help. And all the private farmers and or game reserve owners will try and get behind it. We've just got to wave that flag. We've got to be a big, strong marketing message out there, which we haven't done yet because it's such early days. Mm-hmm. But when it comes, we're going to make a lot of noise and really try and attract investment into this very special place in the world.
Do you have any idea of a final figure what it would cost to realize it?
I mean, how long is a piece of string? That I couldn't answer, but I think that will come out in the documentation. That, you know, a lot of work's going to start going into that. Peter and Andrew and all of them are, and a lot of the private landowners are going to start working on that.
If you fast forward 20 years, paint a picture of what this would look like.
Sure. I think what I quite like about it is it's not just private guys getting together. It's national parks. It's public, private. It's communities. We've got to somehow figure out how hunting fits into this. And I know hunting is obviously so controversial. You've got to hear both sides of the story. You know, you can't go and dictate to the hunters that they must stop hunting when they're providing for so many locals in an area where you probably wouldn't get photographic tourism going. But yeah, the bigger picture is, I think that we create a destination whereby you don't just go to a chamois anymore. You go to multiple reserves, like the Okavango Delta. You know, you spend a couple of nights at Chamwari and then you go and check out Founders Lodge and then you move on down to the coast. Because what's quite interesting is the Addo Elephant National Park is not just it's not just a turf game reserve, it's surf as well. So they've got a large section along the coast just outside of Kabega. And so there's a whole marine element there. So we got the big five, but we got the what we call the big seven now, because you've got the whales and the white sharks too. And so I think it's exciting. You know, a lot of areas up north are pressured now. These huge communities around the boundaries, they've got no real expansion opportunity. But I think the Eastern Cape it could become a mega biosphere reserve. And that, to me, is incredibly exciting.
Well, Paul Gardner, thanks so much for speaking to us.
Thank you very much, Linda. I really appreciate you telling our story.